Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a certified functional medicine practitioner, registered nutritionist, and author. In this podcast, we delve into the world of energy and immune health and wellness with positivity, from optimal health and energy to stress and burnout, right through to immune conditions such as thyroid and autoimmune disease. We deep dive into functional medicine, nutritional medicine, and lifestyle medicine, as well as the personal stories of our amazing guests, from Olympians to famous faces, and guest experts from all different parts of the health and wellness world. It's time to stop letting your health hold you back and become the optimal version of you. Don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health, that's G-O-O-D-E, or visit the website nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more. On today's episode, we're welcoming Liberty Mills, a leading nutrition coach, fertility expert, and wellness advocate, known for helping people optimize their reproductive health through tailored nutrition, lifestyle strategies, and emotional toolkits, especially for those over 35. Working with top medical professionals, she delivers a science-backed yet holistic approach to fertility, be it natural or in preparation for IVF worldwide. Her much-anticipated debut, 360 Fertility, recently launched, offering a fresh take on how to nourish both body and soul on the journey to parenthood, exploring not just nutrition, but ancient practices and future science. Already a trusted voice in Sheer Luxe, Newsweek, and Women's Health, The Independent and Platinum magazine, Liberty is fast becoming one of the most exciting names in the world of wellness. In today's episode, we are going to be busting some myths, looking at some misconceptions, and talking about how language around fertility affects women and men in the modern world. Let's jump straight into today's episode. Okay, so Liberty, it's great to have you on the episode today, and thank you so much for giving up your time to do this. Fertility is a really deeply personal sort of topic, and it's often surrounded by secrecy, maybe a bit of shame sometimes around certain areas. And that's what we're really going to dig into today, is this: how we talk about fertility, some of the myths and misconceptions, and some of the terminology used as well, because I think that's really important, is how we approach it. Why do you think conversations around fertility do remain so taboo? And I know obviously you're probably having them every single day, but I think for a lot of people, they are still a conversation that people maybe get a bit embarrassed about.
There's a lot to do with everything. I mean, there's a lot of taboo around periods. And until recent years, there was a lot of taboo around the menopause. There's a lot of taboo around a woman's body, full stop. I was on Instagram the other day and I was acting in a bikini because someone was injecting vitamin D in my bottom. And lots of people were like, why are you in a bikini? And I said, well, she can't inject through my jeans. Do you know what I mean? And I said, if a man was there in his boxer shorts, you're telling me no one would have commented?
No.
As a 51-year-old woman, there's shame or some kind of judgment against me revealing my body. And also, we've got to look, I wrote about in my book, there's actually a thing called pregnancy art. So when we go to museums, when we go to churches, often how we see a woman is she's either in full blossom, full bloom of 8-9 months pregnant, or she's holding a baby.
Mm.
So we are silently signified from children that this is the ultimate woman.
Yeah.
Within the Western world, it's Mary, the best woman, as it were. You know, she's Jesus's mother. Being a mother, we are taught, is part of your health and part of what defines you as a good, I'm putting my fingers up in inverted commas, woman. So when that is brought into question or difficulty, there is often societal prejudice that somehow we did something wrong.
Yeah.
Either left it too late. We chose our partner too late. Mm-hmm. We chose the wrong partner. We put our career first. We weren't being serious. It's all of these blame things that somehow we are responsible for. I'm quite frankly sick of it.
Yeah. And do you think they are outdated? And
100%, but people still believe it. You know, there's this expectation that it's meant to happen if you're a good person.
Yeah. And how do you think that impacts people, couples or individuals that are going through, particularly people who are going through fertility challenges? So those that are having that sort of...
Massively. I have clients come into me day in, day out, and the first thing they say is, it's my fault. There's something wrong with me.
even the way we talk about that, because we do say, don't we, sort of say, like, we should go and get the test to see if there's anything wrong with me.
Yeah.
It's normal language around this, yeah, this topic, isn't it?
Yeah. And primarily, doctors will firstly look at the woman, even though male factor infertility is massively on the rise. And then there's blame within self. I even felt it. I'm not judging people for feeling this way. I felt like that when I was on my fertility journey, and it even brought into question whether we should be together as a couple. Because if I could not give him the opportunity to be a parent, then I should remove myself perhaps from the relationship.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's when you put it like that, it just sounds so strong and so brutal. And something that you would never really say, you sort of think you would never really say that to somebody, but those feelings come up around it. And
it's conversations that people do genuinely have. I have clients crying in front of me all the time, or texting me and saying, it's my fault, what can I do? Or it's a man and he'll be like, I feel helpless. Maybe she should be with somebody else. You know, it puts so much pressure on people, and people think, oh, IVF will fix it all. Well, it's not going to fix those relationship obstacles.
So let's talk about some of those biggest sort of myths that you come across in your work. So we said we're going to sort of debunk some of these myths and misconceptions today. So one, which we've just kind of touched on, is that fertility is a woman's issue. So what is the, you know, and I'm saying that, I'm not saying that I agree with that. I'm saying that is what we generally hear in, you know, wherever we're talking about it. So let's just debunk that. What is the truth behind?
The truth behind it is that 48%, studies show, not me saying it, 48% of unexplained infertility is a male contributing factor. And within that, 20 to 30% is a sole male factor.
Wow. It's more than you think, just generally, without, I mean, I haven't looked up the figures ever before, and it's more than I thought you would have said.
Yeah. And bear in mind, so at the moment I'm on my second book, so I've pulled back my practice a bit, but I've got maybe like 16 couples, two single women on fertility journeys. And out of those 16 couples, only one of the couples, there isn't a male factor.
Really?
The rest, or the men, all have very, very low sperm profile.
And when these couples come to you, do they come to you initially? Is it like initially the woman coming to you saying, like, "What, I need to know what's wrong with me," and then you're saying to them, "We need to look at the man as well"?
No, as soon as they email me, I'm like, "Do you have a male partner?" Because not everyone does. So, do you have a male? Is there a male partner? Yes. Please, can he fill in this form? Has he had his sperm check? No, because I have PCOS. No, because I'm older. I'm like, well, just because you're older doesn't mean that there might not be a male factor in the fertility. Or you already had a child 16 years ago or 6 years ago. Well, just because he had a child 6 years ago doesn't mean his sperm is wonderful today.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like I'm a bit male bashing here. It quite often takes me a lot of time to get the man on the call.
Yes.
They're hesitant. I'm not male bashing, really. I was just joking. And I blame society for that, because we women do talk about our periods. We do talk about PCOS. We do talk about all of that, going on the pill, painful periods, whatever it is. Men in general are not checking their sperm. Mm-hmm. They're not even checking their testicles. You know, we might check our breasts. We have a smear. A guy doesn't go through that. So he's not going to think he may have an issue.
And they don't talk to their friends the same. They're about issues like that, do they? So when they, not that we want to stick and blame the men all completely, but how hard do you find it to get the men on board? And how do you do that? How do you sort of encourage them to get
it on? Depends who it is. I was talking to an amazing doctor yesterday, Dr. Julie Vaughn, who is she's in New York, and she does a lot of on the spirituality of it as well. And we were saying it all depends on the person. I'm very individual led. So for example, if I've got a hardcore businessman, he's very into statistics, I'll show him the statistics. I'll show him what male high DNA fragmentation, how it can affect failure of implantation, how it can affect early miscarriage. And I'll spell it out to him with the data.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, okay, right, I like that. And they know in general, there's a lot that they can do about it. I've had two guys over 5.5 years that have not been able to improve their sperm. And I range from anything between 10 to 20 couples a week. And those two gentlemen, they didn't have any. When they went in, there was not a lot of sperm anyway.
So it is things that can be worked on. Because I think that's something else that frightens people a bit as well, is if we're going to get these tests and they come back with bad results, can I do anything about it? You know, people worry, is there something that can be done about
it? There's so much with diet, with lifestyle. Now they, you know, there's even AI where they can go in and it helps find the best sperm, not even like how ICSI used to be done with the sperm extraction. They can go in and the AI can find the best one. Absolutely crazy and wonderful. But the great thing is about sperm, you know, it rejuvenates every 2.5 months. So there's a lot that you can do. I had one guy in America, we got him from 1% to 10% in 5 months.
Yeah.
And then so therefore, in the end, they didn't need IVF. They didn't need ICSI. They were able to have normal intercourse and now they have a little boy.
Which is amazing. And that must be a really good part of your job.
Oh, yeah. I was on the sofa last night crying my eyes out when sometimes I forget about a client. And then, you know, once they've got to their 12 weeks, they're off on their way. And she sent me a picture of this beautiful little girl, and my chap had gone out into the kitchen. He came back and I was on the sofa in bits, like crying. He was like, what's wrong? What's happened? And I was holding my phone. He was like, is everyone okay? And I was like, yeah, we've had another baby.
That is a nice part of your job.
It really is, because I remember that lady in the struggle, and she, you know, she was in her early 40s and she didn't believe it was going to happen. And it did. And it's just great.
It is good. And that's another myth I kind of wanted to touch on with you, because we talk a lot about difficulty getting pregnant when you're older. But with that comes the idea, I think, in society that actually it's really easy to get pregnant in your, maybe in your 20s or your early 30s. But why is that not always the case? Because that's not, it's not necessarily true, is it?
It's not necessarily true. I've got clients as young as 24. You know, what happens if you, like me in my life, had an autoimmune disease? What if you were on immune suppressant drugs? What happens if you've got undiagnosed endometriosis? What happens if you've got really, really low vitamin D? I had a client the other day and her vitamin D was 13. And then I had one last night, her vitamin D was 19. Mm-hmm. And no one in her fertility journey, no one had investigated that. What happens if you've got an undiagnosed thyroid issue? You don't know until you try, until you go down that road and start investigating. And that's why I encourage people, if they can and if they have the finances, to go private and get these sort of things checked.
And I think it is important that we do look at all age groups, not just, oh, it's difficult to get pregnant when you're older, because, you know, people, like you said, people have problems from any age.
Yeah, they might have had that problem for 10 years, but they've not started investigating it until their late 30s when they decided they wanted to have a child. I have people come to me, yeah, I've always been constipated, I've always had problems with my bowels, or I've never been a good sleeper, or, you know, I've always bled through my tampon and my towel. I've just had really bad periods. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I see it a lot, because I work a lot with people with autoimmune disease, and with particularly with thyroid. I work a lot on thyroid cases. You know, I see people who have got that thyroid conditions in their 20s and are struggling to get, you know, get pregnant. So I see it quite commonly in younger people as well, because of underlying issues, or because they know they've got thyroid, but the thyroid is not really being managed properly. It's just been kind of whacked on some levothyroxine and left. And, you know, and that's a whole other argument. But I do see it. I see it in quite a lot of younger people as well.
It's very common. I've found a lot. Well, you will know, because you're a thyroid specialist. I see a lot of people and I say, oh, have you had your thyroid panels up? Yeah, everything's fine. I say, have they gone under?
Have you had a full thyroid panel?
Can you go and get that? Some doctors say yes. Some doctors say no. Some people can afford to go and see an endocrinologist. I'd say 2 out of 10 women that I send, their thyroid is fine. The other 8, it's not. Mm. One lady even had thyroid cancer and they told her thyroid was fine. Another lady got signed off work because her thyroid, she had Graves' disease. It was, they were just like, you cannot go back to work today. It's crazy that you've even been able to survive. And also don't try to get pregnant now until we level things out.
Yeah.
So I would always say, test, don't guess, and then you can treat.
Yeah, it is really important. I get people come to me with thyroid and they don't even know if they've got hyperthyroid or Hashimoto's. They've never had the antibodies tested. So they don't know if they've got autoimmunity as part of the picture. I have a question on my form, my intake form, when people come in, and I sort of say, you know, for them to put what diagnoses they've got, and some of them will write Hashimoto's or will write hyperthyroidism. And then underneath, I've got a box to tick. Do you have an autoimmune disease? Most people tick no. And they've just written in the box above that they have, but nobody's ever sat them down and said, do you know that's an autoimmune disease?
That's what I'm writing my second book on, because I know we've gone off pace here, but on my fertility journey, I said, you need to check my thyroid. There is something wrong with me. I have a history. I had lupus. I reversed that. But it means I've probably got other autoimmune diseases waiting to have a little party. And I said, my hair is dry. My hair is falling out. My periods are going like really strong and my skin is dry and I'm getting really hot at night. First of all, they said, you must be going into the menopause.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not. They were like, well, you are. You're 43, probably menopause. I was like, I'm not. I know I'm not. This is my thyroid. I know it. 5 times I went to the doctors. And also I had a dual pain, really thyroid issue. I mean, so painful. It was hard to eat. And I was losing weight. Like at one point, I think I lost 4 pounds over like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm naturally slim. So that's a lot. Then they accused me of having an eating disorder. I used to be a model. Actually came straight out and said it. Then I took my partner, grown woman, had to take her partner in to say, I do eat. Please, can you test her thyroid antibodies? Because she has a history of autoimmune. Are you sure that once she eats, she stays in the room? Then they accused me of being bulimic.
Oh my God. Some bulimic.
So off, I trotted with my 500 pounds and went to see an endocrinologist. And she was like, your antibodies are 4 times over the level. You're never going to get pregnant this way. And if you do, it's not going to last.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I see it so much in clinic. It is terrible. But I don't think that blame that we get as well through the medical system helps either.
No, I was completely gaslit all the way through. I was gaslit until I basically had my baby.
Mm. I was not with pregnancy, but with autoimmunity. I was told by one doctor I sat in front of, and he was like, I think you're probably just a bit sensitive because you're a woman. And yeah, I've talked about this before, and this was a private consultant that I was paying.
To the people that are just listening, I had to put the hand over my mouth.
Yeah. I've been there. I've had that, you know, I've had some very, very good doctors as well. I've talked before, and I've had some fantastic ones, but you know, yes, there's definitely that. I think particularly when you are a woman, I do think they sort of do put things down. And it's no different saying that to me, like, oh, you're probably just a bit sensitive because you're a woman. No different to saying that to saying, you know, oh, it'll be menopause, or, oh, you know, it'll just be probably stress because it's, you know, it's that time of the month, maybe a bit anxious, or, you know, whatever it might be. They put things down to us being women a lot, I think.
Yeah. And it was also, I remember my first appointment when I was pregnant, the doctor saying, oh, congratulations that your IVF worked. And I said, it wasn't IVF. She said, but you're 44. And I was like, well, no, it wasn't. I don't care if it was IVF or it wasn't, or I used egg donor. It was just this.
But it shouldn't be assumed.
But it must have been. I was like, I do know if I'd had IVF or not.
So on the topic of IVF, because I wanted to ask you about this as another one of those sort of myths, IVF is often presented as this solution. It works. This is the thing that is going to get you pregnant. But
I wish reality. It wasn't that. IVF is absolutely wonderful. And we are so blessed to have this science. And we are so blessed that there's many more innovative things coming out, especially with AI and the different ways you can track the growth of the embryos. But it is not, I'm going to walk into IVF and a few months later, I'm going to be pregnant. I wish that people understood that. You have to prep for IVF as though you would prep for natural fertility. They're only as good as the goods that you give them. Also, once they've done their job, it's only as good as the host body that it goes back into. They've got a beautiful embryo and you've put it back into a body that's broken. The body is going to be trying to look after itself rather than grow and support a human. Also, we must remember that when we hand over our ingredients to the embryologists, the amazing bakers that they are, that those are the ingredients for our child's health and also their adult health. So it's not just making do to get pregnant. What it is how healthy do we want our child to be? I was talking to Dr. Karen Joash a while ago, and I was on a panel with some phenomenal doctors last week. One of them is the consultant who advises the World Health Organization. And she was also talking about how vitamin D affects the bone health of your child up to 7 years old. So if we're not looking at those things and we're just concentrating on getting pregnant, it's not about that. It's about a healthy pregnancy. It's about a live birth. And it's about a healthy postpartum. And it's about a healthy child. To me, once we start that IVF prep, I say to my clients, you're not my client. Your child is. Your future child is my client.
That's a really good way of looking at it, actually. I like that.
And that really, really does change the psyche, because quite often what we would make do for ourselves, we won't make do for our children.
Yeah. Puts people into a completely different headspace.
It really does. And it really does switch a lot of things around. And also, what is my little bugbear with IVF is quite often it's used as a diagnostic tool. So first round is, we'll just give you the normal protocol and we'll see how it goes.
Right. Okay.
And that didn't work. Oh, well, we'll test this, this, and this now, because that didn't work. Well, why don't we test this, this, and this before we put you through the messing around with your and controlling your hormones, because it's very taxing on a woman's body.
Yeah.
And it's not nice. And I do take umbrage with, I was looking at the HFEA, some of the stuff on there, and a lot of it was pregnancies between, 18 and 30, then going on about pregnancy rates 40 to 42. It didn't say live birth rates.
So it's just looking at getting...
You're not going in there to get pregnant. You're going in there to have a baby.
Yeah.
They're two different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I took umbrage at the fertility show with a very, very big professor who kept going on about getting pregnant. And he said, you just got to go back to back, even if it's 6-7 rounds. I was shaking. Like, 3 women walked out in tears, because it's okay for him as a man to say back to back, as long as we get, as long as we get the end product, it's okay. I've had ladies wanting to give up their IVF mid-cycle because it's so taxing on their body. Some other women sell through it, but other women don't.
Yeah. And why run the tests after? Why not, like you said, why check everything first, give it its best shot so that the woman doesn't have to go through it a second or third or fourth or sixth, seventh time?
Yeah, because that's a lot on the body. It's also a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not a cheap thing either to do.
Not at all.
And it's not something that everybody, has the luxury of being able to do.
No, not at all.
If you're navigating your fertility journey, or you simply want to support your hormones and overall well-being, the right supplements can make such a difference. That's why I personally recommend W Wellness, a carefully curated platform of science-backed and practitioner-approved products. What I love about them is that everything has been chosen with quality and effectiveness in mind, so you can shop with confidence. And as a listener of the Good Health Podcast, you can get 20% off your order with the code Nicole20. So if you're thinking about preconception health, fertility, hormone balance, or simply optimizing your well-being, head to w-wellness.co.uk. I'll leave the link and the code in the show notes below, and all the supplements that I'm talking about today in my conversation with Liberty will be linked below this episode. Now let's jump straight back into the conversation with Liberty. What about stress? That's something we've not mentioned yet, but I think stress does get, we all live busier lives. You've talked about people sort of putting pregnancy off because of, work and career and all of that. And stress, I think, sometimes does get the blame a lot for it. Can stress really stop somebody from getting pregnant? Or is that an oversimplification? Is it a part of the picture?
Infertility, there's just no one answer, is there? Because if there was, everyone would be getting pregnant and having lovely babies. It's multifactorial because it's nutrient deficiency, it's transgenerational trauma, it's undiagnosed genetic diseases, it's autoimmune. It's a lot of things. And I think stress, stress, because you've got oxidative stress that's going to affect your egg quality. It's going to affect your semen quality. It's going to affect your sleep. That's where you recover. You know, it's going to affect how you absorb your nutrients. It's going to affect your hormones. Are you going to be pooing properly or not pooing properly? So it's going to affect your detoxification. Stress, if you're stressed, you're going to want a croissant for breakfast. Or, you know, when I hurt my back the other way. Oh, no, when I had my allergic reaction the next morning, I woke up, I am a northerner, and I thought, oh, I could just eat some chips. No, that's what I wanted to eat as my comfort thing, chips at 7 a.m. in the morning. Of course I didn't. I went and had chia porridge. But, you know, stress can really affect you. I went through a number of stressful things because maybe I was born a bit weaker with certain genetics. I ended up with an autoimmune disease. You know, so stress really can. And there's lots of things we can do, which is brilliant to help it. You know, yoga nidra, not checking your emails at 10 o'clock at night where your boss has just landed a new thing on you the next day, not checking your bank balance as soon as you wake up so you know that you're overdraft, you know, you're in your overdraft or whatever it is. And there's lots of things. The stress of maybe going through an IVF cycle and thinking it's the booby prize.
That's it as well, because there's a lot of stress. You know, we sort of say, like, oh, you know, you've got to work on stress. You don't want to be stressed when, you know, if you're trying to get pregnant. But then there's naturally a lot of stress if people are struggling to get pregnant. Yeah.
So I think open communication is very obvious. If you're in a couple, look at Imago therapy. It's really helpful because quite often people don't speak up because they don't want to stress out their partner. And then we hold things back and then it creates a void between each other when you need each other. I've got exercises in my book, 360 Fertility, on starting to really love your body again, because I think women quite often feel betrayed by their body or feel that their body is now being given over and controlled by the doctors. So they feel displaced. You know, there's not a lot of connection. To me, that's really important. Really, really important.
Before we sort of move on, because I want to have a look at some of the language and terminology that's used with you, but are there any other myths or misconceptions that you feel strongly about that you think we should talk about? Or do you think we've hit on most of them?
No. And I brought this up the other day. And you can see I'll get really northern and deep. I brought this up between these, you know, I'm on a panel with, I don't know, five or six phenomenal women in the fertility space, like at the top of the top. And one of them said, yes, but we must not discount the age factor. And I said, I get that. I really get that. But, and there's a big but. And I encourage people to look at the work of Dr. Nicola Connellan, who is a longevity doctor, scientist. It's not about chronological age. It's about biological age. When I was 30 and diagnosed with lupus, my biological age was probably that of an 80-odd-year-old because you could see the signs of aging. I was walking with a Zimmer frame. I was frail. I wasn't sleeping much. And we notice as we get to quite a bit older, we don't sleep as much. And then as we go towards death, we sleep a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about understanding that cellular aging. And also, don't forget, and this is science though, we have to take that mean average, that commonality of the average 35-year-old woman. So the average 35-year-old woman may be slightly overweight, stressed out, doing a job she doesn't like, eating 70 to 80% UPF foods, using a microwave because she's really, really stretched on both sides, probably not had blood work done unless she was ill. So she doesn't even know. She's supplementing blindly.
Yep.
Drinking on the weekend to take the edge off to relax. Probably putting on over 168 chemicals on her body every day with makeup, hairspray,
yeah,
lip filler, whatever the latest fad is. Maybe intermittent fasting, which I don't agree with for fertility. I really just don't. I've had so many women do it and then I get them back on nutrient-dense food. And I literally had one lady recently in America, and she got a glucose monitor. I said, just try it out for 2 weeks. You don't have to believe me. I'm not a doctor. Just look at your blood work. Just look at what's going on with your glucose and just see. She got up. She went to the, she had a coffee. She went to the gym. Her glucose out of the roof. She was like, I don't understand it. How can my glucose, I haven't eaten anything. That's not what I've been told.
Yep.
Now she was a 30-odd-year-old woman, and she was like, but that's what I'm meant to do. And I was like, that's not what you meant. You're not meant to starve your eggs.
No. And also, it's not for anything, is it? You know,
yeah, if you're only eating two meals a day and one of them's at work, you're probably not able to get all your nutrients or as many as possible and your good fats and all of those things that you need for fertility from two meals.
Trying to get pregnant is a you know, a big thing on the woman's body, but you're probably not getting enough for just day-to-day life, energy. And, you know, brain fog and all of those things if you're doing that. So, you know, if you're not getting enough to sustain yourself just generally, you're definitely not getting enough to then try and build another human being.
With all it. That's my big taboo ick, is this thing of, you are old, test me, and then tell me my biology is old, and then I'll listen to you. Because you could be 40 and have the blood work of a healthy 20-odd-year-old, but you could be 20, stressed out at uni, or 25, you've got your, you know, your student loans, trying to buy a house, all of these things, and your blood work could be on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it's about. It's more about what state you are in as opposed to what actual age you are.
Yeah.
So let's look at the language that's used, because some of the terms that we... The eyes are clear for those that can't see, that are not watching your video.
I'm closing my eyes.
Eyes are closed.
Belly breathing.
So some of the terms that we hear in the medical world, so things like geriatric pregnancy.
Don't say it. Say it.
Yeah. Geriatric pregnancy.
Geriatric.
Which I think is that like if you're over
35?
Yeah. Okay. So you're geriatric at 35.
I would joke when I went to hospital at 44. I was like, oh, I must be in a coffin then.
They do use these terminology. So you know, geriatric pregnancy, infertile, you know, these words are sort of enough.
Barren. I was told, do you understand you have no viable follicles in your right ovary? And I said yes. And she said, and then they turned to me, this is in a private clinic as well, so I was paying for the privilege to be spoken to like this. Your right ovary is barren.
God.
Barren.
The language though is so negative.
Barren.
Very damaging, right?
Oh my gosh. I wasn't drinking, but I really did want a tequila when the woman said that.
What do you think this sort of language has as an impact on people who are, you know, going through that sort of fertility journey?
I think it's really damaging, because now you're getting girls at like 35 panicking. It's as drastic as this. You might go then and choose the wrong partner.
Yeah.
So you're like, I need to just have a baby right now because the time is running out. I'm not saying don't go and test your, maybe go and freeze your eggs. Go and find out what is going on, because you are advancing in age. We know that eggs do, number does deplete. We know that you are more likely to be stressed and all those things with work responsibilities, but you don't know until you test.
And what do you think, how do you think it impacts people?
I would just like to say, has the man ever been called a geriatric dad?
No.
So I've got clients whose partners may be older. They're like 35. The partner might be 50. She's called a geriatric mum. The guy's not called a geriatric dad. Why? I'd love to know why.
But that is very damaging, I think, particularly to, you know, as we said, this particularly to a woman. The infertile side of things maybe would impact both, but that geriatric pregnancy, it really does impact women. And I think it impacts their approach to everything as well, like you said.
I've had ladies who are coming up to their 40th birthday crying, texting me, calling me, going, no, but I'm 40. Do you not think we should start IVF now and not in 2 months? Because then I would have turned 40. It's that damaging that their rationale goes out of the window.
Yeah.
6 weeks is really going to make that make or break difference of them starting the IVF or not, because they turned 40.
you put pressure on a number, don't we, on that age?
This is going to sound, I don't know if people are going to come out. Well, I get slagged off on Instagram all the time anyway, so who cares? I'm going to say it.
You can say what you want on here.
I'm going to say it. I think it's wonderful. And I, you know, I'm 51. I'm obviously perimenopausal. I'm blessed that I'm still menstruating every month. But this whole push on the perimenopause, menopause, now women are so scared that they're going into the menopause at 36 or whatever. Some may be doing so. But because it's been so put out there, women are so therefore then even more worried about the fertility. I had a lady who was going through a long-term stressful divorce. She'd missed a couple of periods. Her GP, without checking anything, had said, oh, well, you're 39, you're probably going into early menopause. We did some work, some spiritual work, some handling, how she handled stress. You know, we popped her on a couple of supplements to protect her while she was going through that and up things, because we can't always get everything from the fruits, vegetables, meats, whatever kind of diet you're on. Two amazing periods, better periods than she's ever had in the last sort of 10 years. Went to see a private gynae. They even did a scan. She had a few follicles on one, a few follicles on the other. But 4 months before, she was told she was probably just, it was basically said she'd entered the menopause.
But I think this is, again, this is, it just, everything gets put down to that with women, I think.
Yeah, without even looking at
any checking.
I know you can't always test your hormones because they jump around all over the place, but there are certain investigations you can do and get a rough overview, and they hadn't even bothered it. She's a very educated woman, but because of what she's found, you know, the media, everyone's like, oh, I was, you know, I went into menopause at 30, or I went in at 35, and all of these things. We have to look at fertility, because without looking after it, we're not going to have any people around.
Yeah. How do you reframe that? What discussion do you have if clients come into you and they're sort of, they've been told that they are geriatric women, or they've really had a lot of this negative language? How do you reframe that with them?
I always get my clients to test their blood work, and then I get them to do a food diary, and that's a food on the plate and off the plate, so the energy, and we mark out where they were when they first met me, and we list all of their, you know, not sleeping, tired, irritable, pooing every other day, all of these things, short cycle. They see the improvement as we go over week by week, and then every month we'll do a recap, and I quite often look at their tongue as well. So we'll do a photograph of their tongue every month so you can see how their body is healing. And then also I encourage them to have a good relationship with their GP and be honest and say, I want this test or that test because of this, that, and throw the medical journal or the NICE guidelines back at them. So then that they can grow and find out where they are, really looking at the facts on the paper. Do they actually have a bit of time to try naturally? Or is it time that they, because of certain things that are going in their body, do they need to go for IVF? You know, so it's about taking that responsibility, not being panicked, and knowing that there are, for most people, certain things that you can do. And also, if you do have a male partner, making them accountable too.
What about social media? How has that shaped the, you know, we're talking about language that's used and things like that. You know, you've mentioned there about perimenopause, menopause. I mean, that's all over social media these days.
All over it.
Yeah. How do you think social media has kind of shaped the conversation around fertility, both positively and negatively? Has it helped because it's got more people talking, or is there negative?
I think it's wonderful. There are so many women out there showing their IVF stories because lots of people don't even know what it entails. They don't, you know, in my book, or there's Emma the embryologist, you can go on her website and she tells you, I think, 10 questions to ask your IVF clinic before you even start. Shop around, people. Don't just go to one because your friend got pregnant there. They've got a different body to you, different circumstance. I've got clients 3 rounds in IVF and I was like, didn't you ask this? What protocol did you have? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, you need to know. You're a part of the team. It's not a service, you're part of the team. So I think that is wonderful. What I think is absolutely exceptional is access to amazing clinicians. So you can talk to, you know, I had Dr. Keith Duncan on, phenomenal obstetrician from the Portland. Not everyone's going to have access to be able to pay for him, but you could speak to him, put your questions forward for free for 30 minutes. We didn't have that back in my day.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. You've got private midwives. You've got functional medicine doctors. I was talking to a doctor the other day about PRP for egg quality. Normally, would I, even as a health coach, have access to have conversations with him, you know, all the way over in New York? No, I think that's wonderful. What I think is damaging.
Here comes the negative.
Is it still female-led? Or maybe it's my algorithm, I don't know. But I can post something on female fertility, I don't know, get 6,000-7,000 views. Post something on male fertility, don't forget it's 48% a male factor, might be lucky to get 700 views. I know I don't have loads of men that follow me, but still, if you're on that journey in a heterosexual couple, you still need to be watching out what it says about the man. I think it's wonderful that there are, if you do have a male factor issue, there is testing. There's Sean at Knackered Knackers as well. Follow those two. Absolutely wonderful. I think it's great. For me personally, it's been wonderful because I've been able to create a really good network as well. So I can signpost to other people. I'll say, you know, go and check out Jo Hurley, Feed Your Fanny. She'll explain to you about why it's important to test the uterine microbiome. And then they can read about it and then suggest it, that they might test it towards their doctor, or like, oh yeah, I do have these symptoms, or maybe that's something we haven't looked at. And you've got the great work of people like Hertility, you've got Fertility Action Network. People can reach out to those people and educate themselves as well. Because when you feel empowered, you feel less scared.
Yeah. And having people out there like yourself who is debunking some of these myths and talking about these things, like the language that's used and stuff like that, you know, it helps, and it's getting those messages out there as well.
I still get trolled.
Yeah.
I still get massively trolled. And I did a podcast and a reel, it went viral, I think it might be 2 or 3 years ago now. And it hurt what some people said. And for 3 nights, I cried myself to sleep. And I nearly deleted my Instagram. And I think, and it's only from messages of other people going, don't do it, you've got to carry on. And I was like, this is a bigger picture. It's not actually about me. Even if I'm just helping 10 people, I've got to carry on. And on that whole trolling thing, I actually posted something that when someone trolled me via email, they actually went into my website and filled out the form. And in the form with the email, they trolled me and wrote some really nasty things. In that, I posted that, and then the person apologized.
Really?
And then I said to the person, DM me, because if you're feeling that angry, underneath any anger, there's a lot of hurt. And then we've had an exchange, and I said, it did hurt. And they were like, oh, I didn't really think it would bother you. And I'm like, it did. And it might have prevented other people coming forward to share their stories. And I said, but I want you to be happy as well. And because there is a lot of fear and anger around fertility. If someone says something mean to you, just remember it's their story, not yours.
So I think that's something else I hear a lot with people is people will ask questions around pregnancy that are very personal, that on a different topic you really wouldn't ask. So they sort of say, like, you know, we got married, and you know, I've had friends that sort of said, you know, we've got married, and like instantly people are sort of like, so, you know, when you're having a baby. And, you know, they don't know what that couple's circumstances are. They don't even know if they want children.
Or if you meet someone, we moved from London up to Yorkshire, and my partner bumped into someone at the play. It must have been a playground. I don't know. No, it must have been a coffee shop. Can't have been a playground. And he hadn't seen this person since school. And he was like, oh, you know, when are you having kids? And I was just like, oh, you can't say that. Can't say that. You don't know what gender. They might have just had like 5 miscarriages. You don't know.
Yeah. But people do feel, I think, you get to a certain age, and people, particularly for women, not so much for men, but you get to a certain age and people do feel like that is that they can ask these questions.
Oh, you might not want to have children, and that's okay. You don't have to have them. Still a nice, lovely person.
So we've, in that modern world, we've looked at the kind of like that social media side of things. But what about that lifestyle side of things? You know, people are prioritizing careers. You know, lifestyle has changed over the years. It's different to what it was. You know, people are not getting married as early as, you know, as young as early.
And people, you know, if you're in London and you're 28, you can't afford to buy a house in general. Most people can't. You're living in a shared house. If you're living in a shared house, you're not probably going to have a baby in there. Whereas if you live up north where I live, it's really normal because it's cheaper to buy a house, to have your house, and maybe you'll be on your second child by then. Lifestyle has changed. The impact of microplastics, I go on and on and on and will forever go on about it. May this year, the Italian university found microplastics in the follicular fluid for the first time. Now, that's not meant to be in there.
No.
That's going to cause it damage. It's been found in seminal fluid a couple of years ago. So, of course, you know, the work of Shauna Swan, what is her book called? Count Zero or just Zero? It's about how she predicts by 2045, all couples within industrialized countries will need assisted fertility due only to men's sperm because it's on such an unprecedented decline.
Gosh. And that a lot of that is lifestyle.
No, that was just purely from the study of herbicides, pesticides, primarily glyphosate and microplastics, just those three things.
And that's without everything else that you throw in there.
That's without everything else. So, you know, when people, you know, I don't want to panic people. You all can't be Miss Perfect Penny all of the time. And I wouldn't want anyone to be because then you're just going to be extra stressed. But, you know, it's a percentage rule. If someone told you that you could increase your bank account by 70%, you would. So if you can decrease your toxic burden by 70%,
you should.
That can make a huge change in your life.
Yeah. So where do you see things like functional medicine that I do, the health coaching that you do, where do you see that sort of natural support fitting into this landscape of this new, you know, modern?
I wish it would be more, you know, it's like people like me with my qualification are able to call it, you know, doctors that can social prescribe, but they don't. I rang up Kirklees Council when it first came in and said, here's my qualification. I can email you my certificate and all of this stuff. I'd like to social prescribe. Oh, we don't really, can't get our head around it at the moment. Can you come back in a few months? Did it in a few months. Oh, we're still not understanding where the budget goes. Can you come back in a few months? Then I applied for a job at Leeds with Leeds Council. Oh, but you'd have to give it your private practice. And I said, I have doctor friends who are on the NHS and at the Portland. They don't have to. Why do I have to? You know, so I think there's that slight prejudice still within the NHS that needs to like loosen up and get on because you could help people so much and they'd be less of a burden on the NHS. Example, I just had a lady come to me and she just wanted to sort out all of her autoimmune issues before they even started trying to get pregnant. She had multiple UTIs, thrush, chronic fatigue, headaches, missed three periods and had joint pain. I've been working with her for 9 weeks, no joint pain, no UTIs. She's back to jogging. She, of course, is eating better. Her tongue was just like yellowy and cracked and now it's pink and gorgeous. And she's just had two amazing periods. So instead of having to have, you know, naproxen because of the joint pain, because of maybe having to have methotrexate, which you can't be on when you're trying to get pregnant anyway, sorting her out and helping her body. And I only put her on like four supplements, but sorted out her food and the way she was having to tackle life. Now she doesn't have to have all of that medication. She's gone back and had her blood work. Her vitamin D has gone from 19 to 60. All of these things are leveling out. Isn't that better? And I just wish the NHS would hand over a lot because prevention is not only cheaper than cure, but it's cheaper, not just in money wise, but cheaper on quality of life.
And more effective.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at some of like the sort of practical advice for listeners. So if for those that are listening that are maybe considering starting a family now or in the future, how should they start that conversation off with their partner or their healthcare provider?
I say this on most podcasts. I don't care if I get told off. If you are with a male partner and you're in a heterosexual couple and you do want to have a baby and you haven't told your GP yet, go and lie. Lie and tell them you have been trying for a year and a half to 2 years without success. Because if you tell them you want to start investigating it, they'll just say, I'll come back in a year, year and a half. By then, you're a year and a half behind getting the treatment because you still have to do all those tests and you don't know. What's the point in trying if you don't know that you have thyroid antibodies and then you go and you're like, oh, well, I had a miscarriage at 6 weeks and that was the primary cause. Why would you put yourself through that stress? So, you know, they don't know what you've been doing in the bedroom or in the hallway, do they? So
start the conversation early.
Start the conversation early. Men, get your sperm tested. Don't be fobbed off that it can all be sorted out at NICSE. You want to understand why. Start those prenatals. Do not go to pregnant care. There is no care in pregnant care. And I say it over and over again. It's full of bulking agents, maltodextrin, which trashes the, you know, your gut integrity. There's even talc in there. Why would you put talc inside your body? You're not even meant to put it on a baby's bum. So I'm not going to put it in my body. I'd look at supplements like Inessa. They do a prenatal for women that is brilliant because I like it because it's a prenatal and you continue taking it in your pregnancy and your fourth trimester, your postpartum. Then you don't have to be like, oh, I'm now pregnant. Which one do I switch to and stress out? Get your vitamin D levels tested. There's tests you can get under 50 pounds that can make a huge, huge impact in your fertility journey. If you go to Tommy's or you're at the recurrent miscarriage unit, it's one of the first tests they give you. So why test when you're down the road? Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot to tell you this. This is really important. If you are thinking of a fertility journey and you are between, I'm going to have to give you guys the exact, I think it's 18 to 45, the criteria, it might be 43. So I will send you the link. And you are in London, Manchester, Glasgow, or Cambridge near Addenbrookes Hospital. You can apply. I will give you the link to the Poppy study. Imperial College London are doing a Poppy study. So it's trying to understand why ladies are not getting pregnant.
Okay.
You'll get all free testing. So a lot of these things that I've said that your GP might be going, oh, no, wait 2 years or whatever. You can go and apply to do this study. They want you and need you. I meant to be doing an Instagram post about it, but I've been a bit busy. But I will be doing it soon. I'll probably do it tomorrow. And it also is trying to understand why certain women are more predisposed to gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, and miscarriage. So you will get monitored and tested regularly. And it's free and it's all underneath your Imperial College London, Addenbrookes, St. Mary's in Manchester, where I had my first daughter, actually. Yeah, so Poppy study.
Right. So we'll get the link off you and we'll put it in the show notes below the episode. So getting tested, get tested early, speak to the GP early, get those things done, some supplementation. Any other supplements other than the sort of...
Glutathione. Body Bio do a great glutathione. Glutathione is a master oxidant. Take it with the Vit C as well because vitamin C is your carrier vitamin. Yeah, Body Bio. They do the best one that's not insanely expensive because it is an expensive supplement for them to source in the first place.
Yeah.
Omega-3 for men's sperm and egg quality, of course. Choline as well, often forgotten. I would test though. You don't want to, on the basics as well, you don't want to over-supplement either.
Yeah.
That's equally as dangerous.
And what about diet? Can you sort of say like these are the things you need for diet or is it individual? How does...
Bio individual because say it depends. What happens if you're a vegan? What happens if you're...
That's going to be the question I was going to say. Can you...
Yeah, religious quality, you know, preferences, ancestral. I know, you know, a lot of Black or Asian people are not great with cow's milk, but they're great on goat's milk. You know, all of those sorts of things. I talk a lot about it in my book. Who else did a really good fertility cook? Oh, on Zita West's website, she does some really good recipes as well for free. That's really good. I do like a mini 2-week diet plan in my book. I think also looking at ancestral trauma, it's not something quite often talked about, but the work of Dr. Julie Vaughn, she's spiritual fertility book, it's something I started looking into a few years ago when I had a client that was born in a refugee camp, and the three sisters that were born in the refugee camp all were struggling with fertility, and the four sisters born in stability later on in life weren't struggling. There's lots of studies linked into this from the Holocaust and all those sorts of things, because you've got to think, especially if you're a woman and your eggs were in your mummy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Your eggs were in your mummy when you were in your mummy. So if your mum was stressed out, or if your mum had to have life-saving antibiotics or medication, that's going to affect. Genetic testing as well, I think, is really important. You might be carrying around something, and your partner might be doing, that you don't know when you get together. And sometimes there's things that you can have done to sort that out, but you don't know if you don't know.
Yeah, it's finding out. It's getting those, they're getting the test done, finding that information.
Yeah, which is all money. I do get that. But you're going to save your money, people. You know, if that's, say, £200 or another test is £300, you're going to save your money, because you won't be drinking alcohol, because it is a poison. There's no ways about it. Safe levels, non-safe levels. If you're not going to be drinking alcohol when you're pregnant, why would you drink alcohol
when you're trying to get pregnant?
And when you're trying to get pregnant and feed that to your egg, it just makes no common sense to me. And you're going to be saving money on getting your nails done, because you won't be putting those toxins on. I've been talking about this for 6 years. I always say to people say, yeah, but what you put on your skin is not going to matter. You just wash it off at night. And then I say to people, do you believe in HRT? And they say, oh yeah, my friend's using it and, you know, it's changed her life. And especially, she rubs this gel on her skin and she's fine. I said, okay, you told me she just rubbed a gel on her skin and it sorted out all of her menopausal symptoms. But it doesn't apply if you're putting on your fake tan.
Yeah.
Then the rules are out. No. Or your oxybenzone or your homosalate within your SPF that you put on your face every day. You can't have the rules one way and not the other.
No. And I think that is a lot of the problem, is that sometimes people don't want to accept that it's in the products that they
love. I have ladies that say, I'll do anything. I'll do hyperbaric oxygen chamber therapy. I'll have an IV. But I can't give up my nails. And I'm like, I don't really think you're my kind of client. Sorry.
So everything that we have discussed today, and I completely agree with you on that one, but everything...
So northern.
Yeah, I'm northern too, so it's fine. But everything we've discussed today, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of practical advice in there for people, but also a lot of that sort of myth debunking and talking about the terminology and modern lifestyle and these things that really do impact fertility. And I think it is a really important conversation to have. And everything that we've talked about, we'll put in the show notes below this episode. But if people want to find you, or you've mentioned your book and your second book that you're currently writing, the second one.
I'm currently writing the second one. I just got an amazing genetics professor to contribute to the book. So I'm really chuffed. It's going to be my story of autoimmune journey, but also explaining to look back, because I think stories help to look back of, oh, maybe that was a sign. And then I'll explain why it's a sign. But then a doctor or a professor who is, like, you know, the top of their field will explain literally in science of what is happening.
Amazing. So that one's to come.
That one's to come.
But the first one.
First one's already out. You can find it on Amazon or your local bookstore to get it. You can listen to the audio if you can bear my northern twang that sometimes jumps off into all different accents, probably because I've got international clients, so I sort of gel with them sometimes. Or if you want a personalized copy and you know someone that's going through a fertility journey and you don't know what to say to them, because quite often people don't know what to say, DM me, tell me who it's for, I'll write a personalized copy. You can buy it from me and I'll post it, because sometimes that can make a huge difference to someone's fertility journey, to feel that they're seen, because they already feel invisible to the medics and doctors and maybe even to their partner. To be seen on that journey makes such a difference.
Yeah. That's the same story I get with people with autoimmune, is just that feeling heard and feeling seen makes such a difference. And I think it's similar to a fertility journey in that sense, that it's something where people do feel unheard and not, you know, not sort of listened to, not seen.
Yeah. And Instagram, I always answer people if they're nice to me. Even though the people that are not nice, I often answer as well. So I'm mills.liberty on there.
mills.liberty on Instagram and website.
Integrative Liberty. Sorry, it's a long word.
Fine. We'll put everything in the show notes below so that people can get hold of you. But I think it's just really nice if people have really related to this conversation that we've had today, it would be nice for Michelle to just reach out and discuss anything with you that has come up for them. I just want to thank you so much for giving your time today. You've been very generous with your time and I'm very open and honest and talked through stuff that, you know, some people would hold back from, which we don't like on here. We like it when you talk about everything and go for it. So really appreciate you giving your time today and it's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. I want to say one last thing. If you are on a fertility journey, don't just have sex around that window. That is the best thing to relax your body. Have sex anytime. Just enjoy yourself.
There you go. Final bit of advice to go away with.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Liberty, thank you so much for joining me. It's been great.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone you think it may benefit and help us to spread the word on all things health and wellness by rating, liking, or subscribing to the podcast. If you want more, you can listen to more episodes on your favorite podcast app or sign up to my newsletter for my favorite tips, tricks, health advice, brands, recipes, and more at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter. Have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe and I'll see you on the next episode of the Good Health Podcast.